Today is August 22nd, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 131, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO, and this week Brian is out, so we managed to bring in someone that should be near and dear to everyone's heart, at least assuming that you've been listening to Apple Weekly Report for a while now. We have Ricky Spiro with us today.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going? Hey, everybody. I'm Ricky Spiro. And hey, since I'm playing Brian this week, to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. Or you can call 206-202-0647.
Okay, I should have told you the phone number doesn't work anymore. We have no idea why.
No! Oh, script!
Sorry, dude.
But you can send us an email.
That's true, you can. And once we figure out why the phone number thing isn't working, all right, we'll have it working again. So, but Ricky, you know what? It is absolutely great that you're here, and I love having you back, even if it is just for a little while. And thank you so much for taking the time to hop in, especially considering that this was kind of a last-minute thing.
Hey, always a pleasure to be here, and can't wait to get my hands dirty in the news.
Cool. And don't worry. I'm sure there's something in here that's going to get you all dirty. And we have Smile on My Mac as our sponsor this week. We absolutely love them and their wonderful tools. And for people that aren't familiar with what they make, my favorite tool that they have is Text Expander. And if you're not familiar with that, go back and listen to some of the prior podcasts because I've talked about it there. It's a absolutely killer application that takes little abbreviations that you type and expands them out into words, sentences, scripts, graphics, whatever. Absolutely awesome tool. So please go take a look at what Smile on My Mac has going on. You won't be sorry. I know I'm not, and I'm not saying that just because they're a sponsor. It's really true. They make killer applications. And on that note, I suppose I should move us on into the news.
Let's do it.
Cool. Sales at Apple's App Store have topped $30 million. Microsoft managed to get OpenXML approved as an ISO standard. Wall Street says Apple is worth more than Google. And Nancy Heinen kissed and made up with the SEC. There really is a kill switch in the iPhone. Chips may be behind iPhone 3G connection issues. T-Mobile wants its own app store, and Best Buy is joining the iPhone bandwagon. And this week's Ask Jeff question, how to reset iPhone warnings in iTunes.
The App Store, Apple's iTunes-based software distribution system for the iPhone and the iPod Touch, appears to be a hit with consumers. It's already sold about $30 million U.S. in applications. Over 60 million applications have been downloaded since the App Store's debut a month ago, and it is averaging $1 million in sales a day. Apple CEO Steve Jobs commented, "I've never seen anything like this in my career for software." Apple takes 30% out of each application sold, that's its cut, and developers get to keep the remaining 70%. And Apple's cut, according to Mr. Jobs, will cover the company's App Store costs and transaction fees, but not much else. If app sales remain at their current level, however, Apple could see an additional $360 million a year in new revenue.
And Microsoft's OpenXML format overcame its final stumbling block to move forward as an official ISO standard after appeals from Brazil, India, South Africa, and Venezuela failed to gain enough support from their national standards bodies. The file format had been held back earlier this year by claims that the voting process was rushed and that Microsoft's specification information was incomplete. Microsoft's OpenXML file format will now also be known by the very eloquent ISO/IEC-DIS-29500 Information Technology-OpenOffice XML formats.
Now, that's a format you want to use.
I'm all over that. And that should roll off the tongue of government agencies that require open file format standards. But unfortunately, Microsoft's file format overlaps with the already approved open document format, or easy to say, ODF, and could cause confusion as organizations try to decide which office-compatible file format they need to settle on.
Apple Inc.'s market capitalization, or market cap, surpassed Google's last week, with the company ending August 13th with a market cap of $158.8 billion. That's about $1.6 billion higher than Google's market cap of $157.2 billion. Now, market cap is the term for the value of a public company as determined by the price per share multiplied by the total number of shares outstanding. In other words, the cost to buy every share of the company. For the sake of comparison, Microsoft has a market cap of $254.4 billion, while Dell Inc. has a market cap of merely $50.8 billion. HP has a market cap of $112.5 billion.
And Apple's former general counsel, Nancy Heinen, has finally settled the case brought by the Securities and Exchange Commission against her for fraudulently backdating Apple's stock. She agreed to pay the SEC $2.2 million in restitution and penalties, and also, without admitting guilt, agreed to not serve as the officer or director of a public company for 5 years. Now, the charges stemmed from claims that she altered documents to conceal backdated stock option grants to senior Apple executives, and that ultimately led to the company underreporting expenses by about $40 million. After settling with the SEC, Ms. Heinen said in a statement, quote, "With this lawsuit behind me, I look forward to addressing the greater challenges of social justice and economic disparity," unquote, and I can't wait to find out what that really means.
Yes, it's incredibly specific. Following rumors that Apple has the ability to remotely disable iPhone and iPod Touch applications, CEO Steve Jobs confirmed that the company actually can kill applications, but so far doesn't have any plans to do so. According to Mr. Jobs, the capability was included in the iPhone and iPod Touch so the company could protect against malicious applications should any ever slip through the App Store screening process. Mr. Jobs commented, "Hopefully we never have to pull that lever, but we would be irresponsible not to have a lever like that to pull." So far, Apple hasn't disabled any applications, but the company has pulled some software titles from the App Store without any explanation. If Apple does at some point kill applications users have already installed, hopefully the company will provide some transparency for the process and at least offer both developers and users its reasoning behind the move.
Some iPhone 3G owners are complaining of poor and dropped connections, and the cause of the problem could be related to the chips used in the phone. The chips in question likely come from Infineon Technologies and may suffer from issues that cause the iPhone to perform poorly on 3G wireless networks. Nomura analyst Richard Windsor commented, "We believe that these issues are typical of an immature chipset and radio protocol stack where we are almost certain Infineon is the 3G supplier." Now, assuming the issue can be fixed through a software update, Apple will likely release a patch in the coming weeks. And if the problem is hardware-related, however, Apple could potentially face the prospect of recalling batches of iPhones. And so far, Apple and AT&T seem to be dealing with the iPhone 3G connection issues on a case-by-case basis, indicating, at least from the company's perspective, that the problems aren't widespread. And should the issue turn out to be bigger than Apple and AT&T are letting on, it could turn into a headache for Apple, especially if the company has to start replacing handhelds in large numbers.
And T-Mobile, having taken note of Apple's successful App Store, plans to launch its own version of the software download service in the fall. T-Mobile is hoping that its 31 million subscribers will give its store momentum compared to the approximately 10 million iPhones Apple expects to sell by the end of the year, and will also draw in developers who are ready to code for Google's Android smartphone platform. T-Mobile may also be trying to cash in on the hype surrounding the App Store and the $30 million in sales it has generated since its July 11 launch. T-Mobile plans to impose fewer restrictions on developers in hopes of offering more applications than the App Store, which could lead to a wider range of apps or potentially multiple versions of the infamous I Am Rich application that was pulled from the Apple software store. Unless T-Mobile plans to offer applications for all of the cell phone platforms it supports, it may have trouble getting its store off the ground. HTC will be launching the first Android-based cell phone sometime in November, which means there probably won't be too many T-Mobile customers capable of taking advantage of the store's software offerings.
And the big box retailer Best Buy is set to become the first retailer outside of Apple and AT&T to sell the iPhone 3G in the United States, and that's going to happen on September 7th. The company sports about 1,000 stores throughout the country that will dramatically increase the number of locations potential iPhone buyers can purchase and activate their handheld. Best Buy completed a major revamp of 970 stores to include their Best Buy Mobile service, which is the company's in-a-store for cell phone buyers. How about if I try that again? The company's store-in-a-store for cell phone buyers. There we go. And they completed that on August 6th, which happens ahead of their iPhone 3G rollout. The company has also prepared its employees to sell and support the phone, and that word comes straight from President and COO Brian J. Dunn. The added visibility that comes with placing the iPhone 3G in Best Buy locations could be good for Apple, not only because more potential buyers will be exposed to the handheld, but also because Best Buy already sells the iMac and Apple's laptops. Consumers that are interested in the iPhone 3G but wouldn't otherwise go into an Apple store can still be exposed to the Mac, which is something that can't happen in an AT&T store.
Apple released yet another update for its iPhone 2.0 software on August 18. iPhone software 2.0.2 rolled out with the usual description that included only the stunningly terse phrase, bug fixes. While rumors are claiming that the update does address some of the 3G connection issues that users have been complaining about, TMO's field tests so far haven't shown any improvement over earlier versions of the 2.0 software. iPhone and iPod Touch software update 2.0.2 will appear in iTunes as part of the application's weekly update check when your handheld is connected to your computer. To force the update to download and install immediately, go ahead and connect your iPhone or iPod Touch to your computer, click that update in the iTunes summary tab, and that should do you.
Okay. And that means it's time for the Context Machine, and that's where Brian and I usually delve a little more deeply into the news to give you some context on what's going on. But this will be like a flashback to old times because it's me and Ricky doing it.
That's right. Let's get into this thing. This is my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, this is where, yeah, I agree.
Let's rock and roll.
Okay, so Ricky, App Store sales. Apple says that they've sold, $30 million in applications already? What do you think of this whole thing?
I mean, you got to be impressed, first of all, that they're saying, what is it? How many of these phones do we think have been sold? People are saying somewhere around 7 to 10 million right now.
You know, I've been hearing a lot of different numbers, and from what some of the analysts are saying, they're expecting Apple's going to report that overall we have 10 million iPhones sold by the end of the quarter.
Well, so if we're looking at under 10 million iPhones, that means that we're getting, or that Apple is getting, more than $3 of revenue on average from every phone that they've sold. Now, of course, there's iPod Touches in there. There's a lot of stuff that I just totally blew past. But it is impressive that in the course of a month, this thing has turned into a real revenue generator. I mean, this is a real marketplace. If a company started up, was selling software, or was acting as, you know, a middleman, an Amazon of software, and said we did $30 million in revenue in our first month, that'd be a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the number of applications that are showing up that are free, I mean, that says a lot because this, you know, that number, of course, applies to applications that people are paying for. So when you take into account how many applications are being doled out for free, I mean, the App Store must be running through just a crazy number of applications right now.
Yeah, I mean, they say 60 million applications have been downloaded, right? And $30 million in revenue. So that means an average selling price, including a whole bunch of stuff that's free. I mean, what is it? A third or so of the store is free applications?
I think that's about right.
So even with a third of their downloads or a third of the product being free, that's still an average selling price of 50 cents per application. That seems like a big deal. I think the story here is that, and this is, you get desensitized to it after a while with Apple, but the real story is they hit the ground running on something that has never really been done before. I mean, you can compare it maybe to ringtones, but ringtones are such a specific thing. This is really quite extraordinary, I think.
You know, I think that what this shows is that Apple totally gets how to set up an internet-based distribution model. And that said, someone's little red flag already went up and said, Jeff, how can you possibly say they get how to do this? There's been so many problems, blah, 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 blah. Okay, absolutely right. There have been several issues with the App Store. Apple still needs to figure out how to make several things work, you know, like special discounts for customers, you know, all that kind of stuff. But if you look at the App Store, just step back and look at it in the bigger scheme. How many other online stores like this have come out the chute and been so successful so quickly? And I would venture to say none. It's the App Store stands alone right now. And I think that totally comes down to Apple gets how to overall just make it easier for people to get at the software to add to their iPhone or iPod Touch. And so people are doing it.
So let's take, I mean, the comparison here, it's always easier to talk about something relative to something else. And the App Store is kind of a new thing. No one's quite done it like this before. As a way to understand how they're threading the needle, how Apple is kind of walking that really impressive line to make this thing happen, let's talk about the concept of the T-Mobile App Store. Let me ask you this question, Jeff. Where do you think this store is going to be 30 days after it's opened, the T-Mobile App Store?
You know, I think the T-Mobile App Store is going to come out the chute and have a similar reception that Amazon's Unbox did, which is, okay, someone else is trying to copy what Apple is doing, and they have some nice ideas, but their implementation just isn't there. And, you know, which is exactly what we had when Amazon Unbox launched. So I think there will be a lot of people that migrate to that store in the sense that being able to code for Google's Android platform will be enticing. But unless they can make all this stuff fit together and have that whole slick thing that Apple has going on, I think they're going to have trouble with their version of the App Store. And I certainly think they will have trouble competing with or hitting the same level of success that Apple has with their App Store. And you have no idea how difficult it was to get those words out of my mouth. Wow.
You know, it's interesting. One of the reasons, I think, clearly one of the reasons that the App Store has been successful, the Apple App Store has been successful, is because there's no alternative. Right? There are upwards of 10 million iPhones on the market, but there's really only one easy way to get applications on them. And so, of course, people are going to use that as the service. So in a sense, they built that success into what they were doing. They said, this is going to be the only way to do it. And by the way, we're going to take a 30% cut. So when you look at the T-Mobile store, they're going to be competing. The Android platform is an open source platform. So they're going to be competing with all of the other methods that people come up with, hardwired, wireless, to get applications onto Android phones. So T-Mobile won't have that lock. So immediately, they've got more competition kind of in their own front yard than Apple does. That's one thing in their way.
Right.
And then the other thing, as we were talking about when we were going through the stories, there aren't going to be that many phones that run Android. You know, they've got 30 million subscribers. Cool. But most of them won't have phones that are going to be able to run any of the software that they're selling.
Right. Initially, I believe it's HTC is going to have the first Android-based phone to come out, and that's this fall sometime. So hopefully, T-Mobile and HTC will be coordinated enough to be able to get their app store and this phone out at about the same time. And one thing that I'm unclear on, and hopefully T-Mobile will give us more clarification on this before too long. Are they going to have more than just Android applications out there? Are they going to be selling apps for other phones that they sell as well? Because there's, you know, the Symbian platform.
Sure. There's,
I think that T-Mobile has some Windows ME phones.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, so.
Well, and you assume that they will do that. You know, I'm thinking now about my, I'm on Verizon, and I'm thinking about my, you know, budget phone that I replace every 2 years. Verizon has had this thing called Get It Now for at least 4 years. I'm not sure how long it's been around. But that's kind of their app store. Now, I've spent so little time in it that I don't know if you have to pay for any of the actual applications. My recollection is you get the applications for free, but then sometimes you pay for the functionality. So you pay when you use the application. Now, even if T-Mobile uses the model where you buy the application and then you're on some, you know, data plan, and so that cost is included, you have to look at the reasons that Get It Now is not really a big deal. Now, I'm sure that some people use it. There may be Verizon listeners out there that use Get It Now and like some of the apps there. I've never used a paid service through a Get It Now application, in large part because I don't really trust the service. I don't really trust the applications. There's very little information you have when you go to get those applications. And T-Mobile may get this right when they do it. One of the things that is new about the App Store and that will be interesting to compare when T-Mobile does their thing is the amount of access you have to users, to information. I mean, people are out there reviewing App Store applications. We're, you know, we can talk about this maybe, but you know, here at TMO, we're talking about doing some more reviews and doing some podcast stuff. I'm reviewing right now three different App Store applications. There's a whole community, and then, of course, iTunes itself has the reviews built in. There's a huge community, and there's a huge amount of access to information about these things. And so if you're going to go, people are willing to pay $20, $50 for an application because they have some confidence that they're getting something that's valuable. Big difference between what's been done before and again, something critical for T-Mobile to get right if they want to have any success.
You know, yeah, that's actually a really good point. Okay, here's another thing. How about cross-platform compatibility? And by that, I mean Mac and Windows. That's something you get with Apple's App Store.
Good luck.
Yeah, I would venture to say T-Mobile's system is going to be set up for Windows users.
Now, in fairness, Google is pretty good. And so to the extent that they develop Android to be cross-platform, which presumably they're doing, there are some good things out there, some good indications. If the service is entirely Android-based, maybe it'll work out all right. If there's stuff that requires, you know, you download it on your computer and you sync it, then it could get dodgy quickly.
Yeah, and that's something that concerns me because if you don't have a system that's easy for all of your customers to use, then you're doing a disservice to them, and you're clearly cutting out a segment of your user base. And yeah, I know there's all kinds of companies out there that'll say, well, the Mac user base is negligible, so we're not really worried about them. But, you know, that's a substantial portion of the people that are out there looking for the latest and greatest technology. So if you're cutting them off, you're cutting off what in many cases turns out to be the early adopters.
And that actually brings us to another reason why the T-Mobile App Store may have more of an uphill battle than Apple did. You know, Apple's customers, I think particularly Mac users or people that have been with the brand for a long time, as a demographic, they pay attention to technology and they spend money on technology. I mean, Mac users will pay $20 for a piece of software that comes through the Apple App Store. I'm not convinced. I will be actually quite surprised if we see that the broad user base that T-Mobile has which is going to be closer to the worldwide demographic where there's, you know, 3 to 6% are Mac users, I will be surprised if they spend money like Mac users do. And, of course, if you look at iPhone owners, presumably they are disproportionately, it's not 3 to 6% that are of iPhone owners that own Macs. Presumably it's closer to 50% of iPhone owners own Macs.
I would assume that too.
So that may make it tougher for T-Mobile.
Yeah, I could see where that would be a problem. And as long as we're just putting the doom and gloom all over T-Mobile's store, how about the perception by most people that the iPhone is more than a phone? It's a computer in your pocket compared to the majority of the cell phones that T-Mobile sells, which are seen as cell phones.
Sure. And again, we'll see what happens with Android. You know, Google may nail it. They've done a good job on the stuff they've done. So they may nail it. People may come along and they may say, you know what? Android is it. This thing is more flexible. It's great. You know, you can do anything you want to it, and it's unlocked. You can use it on any network. People may really dig that, and they may get really excited about it. But I agree with you. Currently, not a lot of promise on the other phones that you see out there.
Yeah, and actually, I'm looking forward to seeing Android really hit the market because, well, assuming Google nails it and really has a good platform to work with, and developers are writing really good applications for that platform, that's going to be good for everyone because that means Apple will have to stay on top of their game to continue keeping the iPhone and iPod Touch as first-rate players in this whole market. So, you know, it comes down to good competition, and good, healthy competition between the companies making products for us ultimately means that as consumers, we will have better products.
Absolutely, and it's good competition from two good competitors. I mean, if it were Microsoft developing Android, then you'd say, well, this isn't going to work out too well. But Google's getting into this, and they tend to do stuff right when they decide that they're going to do it. And so my suspicion is that we will actually see crazier and more inventive stuff on Android phones before the iPhone. And then what will tend to happen, Apple does this more than I think most Apple watchers like to admit, but they tend to keep an eye out for really clever stuff that's out there, and then they wrap it into what they're doing in a slightly more elegant and polished way. So
right.
they wait, they look, they absolutely mine the innovation that's out there. And I think it's going to be really good for mobile phones and mobile computing to have Android out there and to have it be a completely open platform where people can really do whatever the hell they want to.
Yeah, I think that ultimately, like I said, as long as Google totally nailed this and got it right, it's going to be a great thing all the way around, even if you don't use an Android phone.
Yep. Yeah. So this will be interesting to watch. I mean, my suspicion, and I think we seem to agree on this, is that the T-Mobile's app store is going to, you know, it'll open up, they'll sell some stuff, it'll kind of roll along. And who knows, maybe in 6 months, 12 months, it could be like Hulu. I mean, the NBC service for distributing NBC Universal video content, Hulu.com, that started out, you know, I might have been on the show when that first came out. And I'm pretty sure that we said, yeah, it's unlikely that this is going to gain much traction. But they're doing all right. The service is there. They have customers. They've been adding content. It works well. So, you know, T-Mobile may fix this as it goes, and it may very well become a viable competitor. So it will be interesting to watch. And I think, like we're saying, it'll be really interesting to watch in the context of iPhone versus Android.
Yeah, okay. I just have to go down the Hulu path for a second. I don't get it. I've played with Hulu over and over, and I'm just not getting why people are digging Hulu.
Well, I can tell you, so we actually watch it a fair amount in our house. We don't have any special cable. We've got basic cable. And we have an ITV, so we record some stuff that we want to see. But, you know, my wife will look around, she'll say, well, you know, I've been hearing about such and so show, and so she'll check it out. We watched all of Studio 60, which is an Aaron Sorkin show. We just watched the whole show on Hulu, and it's by far the easiest way to get it. The ads are negligible. You have to watch it at the computer, but we watch it like we're watching TV. So we just set up the laptop on the coffee table and we watch it. And so there's no really good solution for watching it on, your TV. But it works. You know, if you have a laptop, it's a perfectly good way to watch stuff.
You know, okay, that's the thing that I don't get about one of the things. Just the whole watching that on your computer. Now, in your case, you can take the laptop and put it out on the table or coffee table, whatever, and watch the show there. And I suppose I could do the same thing. But I also have my really beautiful 23-inch Apple Cinema display that sits on my desk when I'm working throughout the day. And when I take a break and want to, like, go watch some TV or something, I'm actually at the point where I don't want to see my computer while I'm doing that.
Sure. No, so, absolutely. And I understand that it's the worst thing about the service is that it doesn't have an ideal device to run on. Now, if you have a Mac Mini hooked up to your TV, cool. And if NBC had partnered with TiVo or with, of course, Apple would never let them get through the Apple TV. But if there were a device that some people had sitting at their TV that would suck the video down without having to go through the web portal, that would obviously be better. But the service itself, even though it's not a complete solution, even though, as Steve Jobs said when they released Apple TV, they haven't completed the picture. They haven't done that. It is still a perfectly functional service. And the content, you can't argue with the content. You know, they've got successful shows. They've got a lot of back catalog there. So if you want to happen to see their stuff, it's the place to go and see it. Now, it is not, obviously, a catch-all place like iTunes is meant to be, where you can get any TV show from everyone. So they haven't, it's not like they've nailed it. It's not like, you know, they're going to beat anybody else at this game. But for what they're trying to do, it appears to work.
Yeah, and I guess that's just one of those things where I'll have to sit back and just accept that everyone else likes Hulu except me.
Well, I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there that think it sucks. I think for what it is, they get the job done, and they're not, you know, they're not in it in a race. They're just trying to make a little bit of extra money off the content that they already have.
Right.
And, you know, do I think that they should be in the iTunes store? Sure. Do I think that they should make their stuff more widely available? Sure. But the service itself that they've put together, I think, you know, it gets the job done.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll trust you on that one. And all right. I totally took us off in a different direction.
All right. Well, let's. I guess let's just talk briefly. We can talk one more thing here. We were talking before the show. So Apple's market cap. Does it matter that it's whatever that is, 0.5% bigger in market cap than Google?
You know. And I'm glad you remembered to hit that topic, because I'd gone past it on the list and forgot it was there. So thanks for going back to that. I think it matters, and at the same time, it doesn't. I think it matters in the sense that people seeing that Apple's market cap is bigger than Google is good for people that really like to watch that. And to a degree, it shows a sense of the health of Apple. And comparing it to Google, because Google has, like, insanely high stock value, and, you know, that says a lot. And at the same time, when Apple passed up, was it like 2 years ago, when they passed Dell?
Yep.
And actually, I remember that happened during Macworld Expo 2 years ago. And I remember writing an article about that. And that was a huge thing, that Apple suddenly was over the 50 million or 50 billion, whatever that Google or Dell. There we go. Look, I had to snap my fingers to remember that inconsequential computer company's name. That was a huge thing, because that showed people that Apple was a company that was moving forward and was strong and healthy and growing. So in that sense, I think it matters. In the grand scheme of things, one company having a higher market cap than another company, especially when you're looking at a computer company versus a service company, in essence, with Google, well, you know, is it that big of a deal to compare those two companies in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think the In a sense, I think it means more when Apple passes Dell or HP or IBM, all of which they've surpassed in market cap. I got that right? IBM is smaller in market cap.
Yeah, they're like 112 or something.
Okay, so I think that means more in some sense. It's kind of a apples to apples comparison to a greater degree than comparing Apple with Google. I think the one thing that this does, Wall Street is going to value companies however it's going to value them, depending on how it's valued them in the past, and to some degree how it values their competitors. But fundamentally, they're going to do what they're going to do. I think that the one thing this does is it requires that anyone, and I should be careful because some folks may listen to the show that feel this way, Wall Street does not ignore Apple. Wall Street does not understand Apple. Wall
Right.
Street understands that Apple is making a ridiculous amount of money, that Apple is a very large company, and they recognize that they can make a lot of money by investing in them. Now, you can argue whether or not they understand the business strategy. You can argue whether or not they understand the strategy and the philosophy driving the product development. I think some of them probably do and some of them don't. Some of the ones that are bullish don't understand the product strategy. Some of the ones that are bearish don't understand the product strategy. That's kind of a different issue. But everyone agrees now, and you can't argue with it if you're looking at a company that's valued at, it's what, like half the Social Security budget in the United States. It's a ridiculously large number. I mean, it's insane, right? I mean, these are numbers that you can only get to if you start talking about the United States federal budget. That's the only thing that's left to compare it with, right? Eventually, we're going to be comparing it to the national debt, numbers in the trillions, right? But for now, it's the Social Security budget and the defense budget. Those are the things that we can compare it to.
That's absolutely awesome. I hadn't thought of it that way before, but I love it.
Right? So these are big numbers. And once you're talking about a company that's worth that much, I mean, Apple is a Fortune 100 company. They have their eye on the Fortune 10, as far as anyone can tell. They're entering new markets all the time. They're versioning their products faster and more substantially than their competitors in software, in hardware. I mean, they are really on a move, and Wall Street recognizes that, and Wall Street's making a lot of money off of them.
Oh, they certainly are. And, it's times like this that I wish I had bothered to buy Apple stock, like when it was back around $13 a share.
Yes,
I'd be fat and happy right now.
That's right. We could all be a little bit more fat.
Yeah, well, there you go. All right, so that said, how about if we take my fatness and move on to our new segment that we added in our last podcast, which is Ask Jeff. And for those of you playing along at home that might not be familiar with this, and of course, Ricky, since you haven't been on the podcast for a while, this is new for you too.
Sure is.
If you have a question that you want me to try and answer for you, send that to awr@macobserver.com, and I'll try and answer it for you. And of course, I can't answer every single question because there's simply not enough time, so I'll do one each podcast episode. And so I'm going to start, this week, I guess I'm going to start and finish with one because that's what I just said. Aaron Theiss, he sent in a question like so quickly after our last podcast went up that I just felt compelled to answer his question this time.
All right, now, so can I be Aaron?
Oh, please, be Aaron.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Theiss. I'm sorry, Aaron.
Sorry, Aaron.
This is my impression of Aaron Theiss. There was a pop-up when I synced my iPhone apps that I stupidly never read. I eventually checked the box to not show this anymore. Now when I download an app from my iPhone, they are deleted when I sync my iPhone with iTunes. How do I fix this? So if I delete an app on my iPhone, it's not deleted when I sync it later with iTunes. Thanks. Me. Aaron Thuss.
That was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Okay.
Why, thank you.
So the answer for Aaron and everyone else that is stuck in that same boat is easy, but it's not obvious. Here's how you fix that problem. What you need to do is reset your warnings for your iPhone or iPod Touch. So connect your iPod to your computer. So plug in the little USB cable. Then go into iTunes, and there's that media column that runs down the left side of iTunes. Find your iPhone, iPod Touch, iPod, and then right-click or control-click on it. You're going to get a pop-up menu. And one of the options in that pop-up menu will say Reset Warnings. Select that, and that Do Not Ask Me Again checkbox that you had checked previously and now wish you didn't, that's now unchecked again. And all of those warnings that ask you things like, do you want to copy the applications off of your iPhone back to iTunes, they will start appearing again. So control-click on the device's icon in that media list in the, on the left side of your iTunes window, choose Reset Warnings, and you're good to go.
All right.
So once again, if you have questions that you want me to try and answer for you, send those to awr@macobserver.com. And then, of course, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to, what a surprise, awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. Okay, and I just have to add, since unfortunately, Brian isn't here today. Brian came up with that line that I use every week, succinctness is next to steveliness. And you have no idea how much time I had to spend practicing that so I could actually say it without sounding like I was drunk.
It's that double C.
That's right. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And Ricky, thank you for being the man and stepping up to help me get through the podcast this week.
Hey, my pleasure. Good to be back. And of course, the content is written by the staff of the Mac Observer, most principally Mr. Jeff Gamet on the other end of this line, and John Martellera and all those other fine folks, staff of the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. The bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, and the bass, it's been a while since I've said this, is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
And until next week, we'll see you online.